Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about IVF, infertility, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Hey, hey, happy Easter, mate.
Hey, yeah, it's Easter Sunday when we're recording this.
It is Easter Sunday. You had any chocolate yet?
I have. I took matters into my own hands this year because I knew that Mr. Gabby probably wouldn't get me an Easter egg. So I got him one.
Ooh,
that I
nice
wanted to eat.
Nice passive aggressive move. That's great.
It's Terry's chocolate orange, which is clearly a favourite of mine, not a favourite of his.
Nice. Very, very nice. Well done.
Yeah. So we've eaten quite a lot of that already.
I had a boiled egg.
A boiled egg? Interesting. Mm. Oh, I also had scrambled eggs. Sorry, just to...
Well done.
You know, along the egg
well
theme.
Well done.
What, have you not got an Easter egg?
Well, there's this dairy-free issue that I've got going on.
That is an issue.
And basically, I'm sorry if other people think this, but all dairy-free chocolate is disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Like, I just haven't found a nice one. I haven't found a single nice one, except ones that are like aggressively dark, which I quite like.
Yeah.
But I don't think they make Easter eggs out of it unless it's like £40.
I see. How about, what are they called? Bougie ones?
Yeah, I don't know if they do Easter eggs. They do truffles.
I bet you do.
Don't know if they do actual chocolate. They probably do. I mean, I've got to say, I haven't done the research. Hoped John would, but no.
We'll see.
I haven't got him an Easter egg either.
You can't leave it up to the guys to do these things.
I don't know. The thing is that I've been sending John out to do the... I mean, I've been sending out... He's been going out and doing the food shopping, partly because he's the chef in our household, so he like knows what he wants to buy. Yeah. And secondly, I think it makes him feel like a big hunter-gatherer.
Oh, nice. Massaging his ego.
Yeah. Because going to the Sainsbury's at the moment takes probably 2.5 to 3 hours.
Takes time.
Yeah, because you have to go queue, put the gloves on, put the mask on, then you have to go, and it takes him a good hour and a half to do shopping.
Is he
anyway.
Putting gloves and masks on to shop?
He does not really. He put gloves on my mother's recommendation.
Okay,
but then there's a lot of people that say gloves don't work. So I think stick to government recommendations, really.
Yeah.
But my mum also washes her groceries, so
yeah.
I mean. Some people are taking it quite far.
My dad has like a quarantine area at the front of the house where all things that come into the house have to stay for a period of 48 hours before they're touched by anyone.
I've got to say, I'm glad mums and dads are taking it seriously because I didn't feel like they were taking it seriously at the beginning.
Yeah. No, my dad's been very serious from the start.
I'm absolutely delighted by that.
Yeah. And he thinks we should do the same, but we're not. But we are currently, I'm sure it's a conversation that lots of people are having at the moment, which is, when do we start wearing masks? Should we wear masks? Because I know, you know, people are wearing them, even though the government's saying you don't need to.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, Margate is entirely masked.
Is it?
I don't see many people without them.
Oh, really?
Where are they getting these masks from? That's my question. A lot of people with scarves wrap around their faces, which just makes the whole place look really, really cold all the time.
Yes. I have to admit, I've purchased one off Etsy, which has a gingham pattern on it.
Mate,
Yeah, I know. I'm going to look like a right twat. I haven't worn it yet, though. So, yeah, we'll see how
that goes. Yeah, I think mask wearing is probably not necessary, but optional. You know, it introduces a whole new option to our wardrobe, so there is that.
It really does.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. What else has been going on, mate?
Well, I would say this, the fourth week of quarantine. So we're about to go into our fourth week, aren't we? Mm. I'd say my mood has turned somewhat.
Oh, for the better or for the worse?
No, I was quite jolly most of the way through, and now I'm just getting a bit frustrated. Like, the weather's been so utterly glorious. Yeah. All I want to do is go outside, sit in a park somewhere, but I can't because, like, some police will come and get me.
Yeah.
And also it's socially irresponsible, mainly.
It is. Yeah.
So I've turned to hashtag self-care.
Oh, okay. Yeah. This is interesting.
Yeah, so one thing I've done is these exfoliating foot socks.
Oh, I love those guys.
Which are amazing. So you put them on for an hour.
Yeah.
And then like a week later, all the skin on your feet peels off, which is absolutely disgusting. Like, yeah. Absolutely disgusting. But so satisfying. And then underneath, you have beautiful new skin.
I don't know, mate, because on your recommendation, I got one of those last year.
Yeah.
And my experience of it was less than ideal.
Really? What?
Like,
did I know about this?
I don't know if I ever told you. But obviously, they went through that disgusting peely bit where...
Utterly disgusting.
Yeah, like, that is expected, right? They tell you that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, like, the skin on my feet never completely peeled off. So I had, like, patches of, like, gross old skin and then baby new skin. And it just never righted itself.
That is an unsatisfying experience. I'm sorry that happened.
I'm not going to lie, Emma. It was traumatic. And I only have you to blame. So
I'm so sorry.
I just wanted to share that with our listeners in case they all run out and buy them.
Okay, well, that's not a product I recommend then.
Well, it can go one of two ways. It could be fantastic, like your experience, or less than fantastic, like my disgusting scaly feet.
It's a lockdown gamble.
It is indeed.
The other thing that happened this week. So, you know how Instagram adverts just get you?
Yeah.
Like, you'll be just scrolling through Instagram and then suddenly there's an advert and it's exactly what you think might radically change your life and turn you into a better person. So I got by one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a subscription-only perfume.
Right, okay.
That comes out 3 times a year.
Ooh.
It's like an artisanal perfume. A fragrance.
Is it organic?
Almost definitely.
Oh, lovely.
So it comes out 3 times a year on the solstice and the equinox.
No, bugger off, does it?
Yeah. No, 4 times, sorry, 4 times. And I'm not going to say the name of the product because I feel like it's quite expensive. And we're not an advertising service here. We're not ITV.
No, we're not. No. There's no product placement.
Except for our...
apart from the actual ads.
Apart from the actual ads. But it basically, I just got by that. And at the time I had a little bit, I didn't realise the entire economy was about to shut down. So I was just like, I'll sign up for it.
And they were like, spare cash.
Yeah. But it only gets sent to people who are on their ledger. And they were like, there's a waiting list for our ledger at the moment. And then 3 days later I got a text that was like, ledger's open. And I was okay.
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 That wasn't too hard.
Yeah, it wasn't too hard. So anyway, arrived. Yesterday, and it's like the nicest experience to get something that's so completely frivolous at a time like this. It's just so like just a beautiful thing, and it smells gorgeous, and it's got like a little leaflet with it telling you like how it was created and who created it and what the base notes are and the things like that. And it's an absolute delight.
You've sold it to me. I haven't worn perfume fucking years.
I knew I was being frivolous when I bought it, and I knew I'd feel silly, and then I had to kind of admit it to John because I knew he'd think I was being silly.
Yeah.
And I just bought it.
Do you think it's fertility friendly? Because obviously we've been told that we shouldn't wear perfume by certain books, aka it started the egg.
I mean, it is a small batch organic perfume maker.
So it probably doesn't have all of the bad stuff in it, maybe.
Yeah.
But we don't know that.
But also they say they never sit still and never stop creating.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, also, my favourite bit is this. Can I just read you this bit?
And yes, please do.
We'll move on to actual, you know, stuff that's appropriate. It says here, a perfumer's work is never complete. Though the run must be produced and the formulation agreed, it is not a conclusion. It is merely a punctuation, a beat, a pause. Ideas are left unexplored.
Oh,
I'll leave you with that.
God. Yeah. That's incredible.
So what have you been up to, mate? Anything anything that deep or meaningful?
Absolutely not. today I got dressed in a dress and I've dried my hair and put makeup on.
Mate.
Because I was
You're
just kind of
smashing it.
I was kind of getting sick of just looking like shit. And it's gone to the point now where I was like, I wonder if I can even look better. Like, I've forgotten what it's like to look better. So I thought I'd better try and see if it's possible. And I do look markedly better. I am definitely carrying a bit of extra weight around the face, which is
same.
It's an obsession.
The face, the arse.
I mean, everywhere. It doesn't really bother me when I carry extra weight in other places. I've definitely got loads of extra wibble wobbles on my tummy and probably thighs, but it bothers me on my face. I don't, if I had just had a skinny face, I don't care about the rest of me. I've actually got a friend who, whenever she does put weight on, it's never on her face, ever. And I'm just like, how do you do that? I think it just goes to my face first.
You've got an absolutely lovely face, though.
I mean, you have to say that. But anyway, yes, now it's a face with makeup on and it's framed by hair that's been blow-dried. It does look slightly better. So, you know.
You could always try contouring.
Mate.
I mean, you've got a bit of time to yourself now, so you could just, like, have a go, see what happens.
Yeah, no, that's so far from what's going to happen. Like, that's just not on the radar. I actually burnt my face the other day because I'm not putting makeup on, I'm barely putting moisturizer on. My self-care is other, like, the opposite of you. It's just nosedived. And so I forgot that I don't have any sun protection on my face and I've just gone out. And I came in and I was like, oh my God, my face is red. So I've immediately purchased some Clarins face sunscreen.
I need some of that. I need some sunscreen badly.
Yeah. Also not an ad, sorry. Product
also,
placement.
Also, not an ad. Yeah, we're doing some product placement. Product placement? Yeah. Product placement here.
Yeah, today I'm sponsored by Terry's Chocolate Orange and Clarins.
And
I wish that was the case.
My two ideal brands to sponsor me. Yeah. I'm sponsored by this perfume brand and the foot thing. That's it. And if anybody wants to know the names of the two brands, they can message me. We'll give the contact details at the end of the segment. Happy to share. Just
you're so BBC friendly, not mentioning brands. I'm like right out there. I'm ITV over this.
I live and wait for that job offer.
I like it. Well done, mate. Well, should we chat episode?
Let's chat episode. So this week, we've done a work episode before, but that was just us twatting on about our experiences. We've got some actual people who actually know stuff this week about
some
fertility
experts
at work. Yes, experts. One of those experts is Becky Kearns, who we've had on before. She is at Defining Mum on Instagram.
She is.
She's an absolute legend. She talked about egg donation and early menopause when she came on before. Now she's telling us, she's sharing her years of experience in HR.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also, so she has started a business with Natalie Silverman and Claire Ingle called Fertility Matters at Work.
Yeah.
And Claire came on as well. So they're both talking about work, going through fertility treatment while you're trying to work.
There's so many conundrums that come up when you're doing that. It's just like, you know, you're just constantly like, oh God, do I tell them? Oh God, when do I tell them? Oh, can I tell them? Am I?
It's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. So yeah, we had a good little whiffle waffle about that.
We had a good chin whack. I just want to do a note on the sound. I know I've done that the last few weeks, but this week is no different. There were four of us having conversation. We were all in separate locations. We were all using different technology to try and record ourselves. There's a hiss. I'm not going to lie, there's a hiss.
Is there a hiss? No.
Yeah, so there's, you know, but you don't notice it after a few minutes, so just stick with it.
I'm sure nobody else will notice it apart from you. You're a perfectionist, mate. I'm sure.
Yeah. But, you know, it's definitely worth sticking with.
And we've got Liz and Nick from Easter Eggs to Egg Donation. They are...
that's great.
They've been to the egg bank this week, haven't they?
They've been browsing. They've been browsing. So they're going window shopping.
Yeah, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, very appropriate.
Indeed. And Professor Tim, also
Professor
eggs.
Professor Tim. Well, yeah, so yeah. What? I didn't even realise that we were doing this very Easter appropriate episode. So he's talking about AMH versus low egg quality.
Yeah.
So is your AMH, if you have low AMH, does that mean you're going to have crappy eggs?
It's a question that comes up quite a lot, isn't it?
It is, and people ask us a lot, and we have never been able to answer because we just don't know.
I still don't know.
Still don't know.
Even listening to Professor Tim. so he'll be finally answering that question for all of us.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, that's it. So if you've got anything to say, please get in touch.
Yeah.
You can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Instagram.
@BigFatNegative.
You can follow us on Facebook.
BigFatNegative.
You can follow us on Twitter.
@BigFatNegative.
And we'd love it if you rated and reviewed the podcast.
We really would.
Because it helps other people to find it.
Enjoy the show, guys.
Hello.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. How's your week been?
It's been good. Got back into the gym?
Yeah, we did get back into the gym, didn't we?
Yes, however, I'm still looking at it from a financial point of view and how much each trip is costing. So far, it's £10 a trip.
Oh, well done.
The more I go, the cheaper it gets.
Excellent.
So,
well done.
I might change my thought process to getting fit, but at the moment it's financially driven.
Well, that's fair enough.
Have you got a goal?
Yeah, so I'm training for the triathlon, aren't I?
Yeah.
So we've been trying to do like non-fertility related things to get us out of this. I think we might have mentioned this last week.
Maybe, but we weren't going to the gym then.
No, we weren't. No, that's a new thing. That's this week's thing.
Yes.
What else have you been up to this week?
We have been looking at the London Egg Bank.
Yes. Do you want to
catalogue?
Do you want to explain a bit more about what that is?
Well, I think as far as I can guess, you just hand over the iPad with a screen and it's already on there for me to look at. So it's my understanding that essentially it's a little bit like a shop. And it's got a list of potential donors,
yeah,
a little bit of information,
yeah,
and then you can click almost add to cart, add their eggs to the cart,
yeah,
which is a bit strange.
Yeah, how did you feel about kind of doing the scrolling?
Well, I don't know, because when I was looking, I didn't really know what my criteria was.
Okay.
Am I really interested in how they look? I know the idea is them to look like
me.
You. But it always feels weird to like disregard other people, because the message you'll be giving to your kids is looks aren't important. And that's what you've always, it's more important about their personality and stuff. So it's quite hard to like go, nope, not you.
Yeah.
So it's a bit strange. So I was looking for, there was one that said something like happy upbeat. That's kind of good, because if you're looking for probably like as well as physical health, you want their mental health to be very good.
Yeah.
And then they give bits about their interests and stuff. And I don't know, really, realistically, that's not genetic.
Do I care?
But it isn't, because I've got like two brothers, and we all come from the same parents, but we're all completely different from each other. So I'm not sure how relevant that would be to base your picking on a donor.
Yeah, like, is there more information there than you expected then?
Probably a little bit less. What do you think? I don't know how much you expect.
Yeah, I don't know if I really had that much of an expectation before we went into it.
Mm.
I mean, I think probably there's more information than I expected.
Yeah.
Because I was very much led to believe that it was like, it's, you know, you just know the basics about them. As in, how tall they are, how much they weigh, like how old they are, what hair colour and eye colour. Actually, not even how old they are. I don't know why I said that. Like hair colour and eye colour. Like non-identifying characteristics.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of information of why they're doing it.
Yeah, so I didn't even think I expected that.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like bare bones. Mm. And I don't know if it makes it better or worse that they're actual real... Yeah. I know this is really stupid, but they're actual real women.
Some of the descriptions, it's not really them describing them. It's as if someone else is describing them like, oh, she seemed really nice when she came in.
Yeah. Like, I don't know... So, a bit of background. Nick and I met online.
Yeah.
And it felt a bit like that. Do you know what I mean? When you're scrolling through people's profiles to, like, click on whether you like them or not.
No one said they like cheesy mash.
That's true, actually.
That was on your profile.
It was on my profile. If somebody said they like cheesy mash, I think I'd be like, that's my woman. But, yeah, it was really strange. Like, I've been reading a bit of stuff about... you know, donor conception and how did you find your donor, and you know, people are like, oh, it really just felt right for us. And I don't know, I haven't spent a lot of time on that website, but I think I'm still not entirely sure if it's the route for us.
Yeah, it's still it's a bit of an alien concept at the moment, because you shouldn't have this much say. It's just you get pregnant and you get what you're given, essentially.
Yeah, it feels really strange. Like, I don't know, like you say, it's still a bit of an alien concept, I think, isn't it? So it's a bit like, I don't want to use the term normal, because that's, I don't know, there's sort of connotations around normality, etc. But this is not our normal life. No. It's not what you expected. It's not how you expected to create your family. It just feels very, like you say, alien. And I'm just not sure how we feel about that.
No, I didn't expect there to be a button, so it says you add to cart.
Yeah.
It's add to order.
Yeah.
Six embryos.
Yeah.
Six eggs.
It's just weird.
Yeah. But I think there'll be some element to that in adoption as well. There'll be some element, probably even more element of sort of what you want and what you don't want.
Yeah.
Isn't there?
I guess it's basically going back to what the counsellor said last week, in that you kind of almost have to really step back from how you initially thought you were going to create your family, like that view of your perfect family. And I suppose like 5 years down the line, it's probably not going to make any difference, because you're hopefully going to have a child out of it, whatever way you decide to go with it. But at that time that you're making that decision, it just feels enormous.
Yeah.
And I think all of those, it's not just the making the decision of click add to cart.
Yes.
It's then all of the consequences from that one click of a button.
Mm.
And I think she's absolutely right in what she said, the counsellor, that when you actually start seeing it in front of you, it really does become real and an actual genuine possibility.
Yeah. And yeah, I think she was right in what she said about you have to go in with almost like a light-hearted approach to it.
Yeah, I feel like this is quite light-hearted.
Yeah.
Maybe we should send this to her and be like, is this lighthearted enough? Are we hitting the right notes here?
Yeah, because I think you could... I think the longer you look at it, the harder it's going to get, because you're going to second guess. It is, like you say, such a big decision. But then in some ways, it shouldn't be a big decision. You go, healthy eggs. Yep, that'll
do. Yeah. It's. I mean, I don't know, because so this week for me has been a bit of a hormonal week.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I got my period on Wednesday.
Really?
I did. Rude. And it was a bit of a kicker. It was a bit of a kicker this month. And then literally the following day, I had a text or a message come to a WhatsApp group that I'm part of with a photograph of a friend's newborn baby. And it was just, obviously really lovely for them. It's great news. But it was just that, again, reminder of this is probably not how, or this is potentially not how my family's going to be. I'm going to have a very different experience to you.
I think hope, that's the positive thing about donor. Once you go through the initial procedure and hopefully get a positive pregnancy test, then it should be quote unquote normal.
Yeah.
Of course, you've got to bear in mind later on when you're explaining to your child where they've come from.
Mm.
But I think hopefully that'll become normal anyway, because we won't know any different.
Yeah, and I think for us it'll be normal. I think, that'll be our life, won't it? And you just feel a bit like you say, as much as, you want to get that positive pregnancy test, there is going to be that key difference of you then have to explain to your child and any potential siblings, this is how they came to be, which is, hopefully going to become, the norm, the standard within your family. But then it's the ripple effect of that, of like, who do you tell outside? I'm probably overthinking it massively.
I think you were talking about this earlier, weren't we? Like, because you were thinking of all the scenarios, different scenarios. If you had a donor-conceived child and then adopted, how would you explain the two difference?
Like, would they let us? I mean, that was the thing that really hit me out of the counselling session, last week, that it may be that actually the adopters would be a bit dubious about us if we had a donor-conceived child.
I don't know. I think it's just another consideration. I don't think it's a make or break.
Yeah.
I think it all depends on the family itself.
It's just another thing, isn't it? It's just another thing to think about, that we have to think about, that people who are fortunate and get pregnant naturally don't necessarily have to consider.
Yeah.
It's all of those follow-ons.
What I'm hoping for is once you have your child, you will just go with it. You won't so much. You just have to react to stuff. Now you can overthink everything
massively,
but you'll just be reacting to stuff then.
Yeah, it's also all the unknown, isn't it? So we were watching earlier a video which is on the website of the DCN, which is the Donor Conception Network, and that's a support network for people who are either thinking about donor conception from either a sperm or an egg perspective, or who have a child who's been conceived by a donor, or who is a child conceived via a donor. And so they're there as a support network, a little bit like the fertility network is there for obviously women and men who are going through infertility. So they had a video on their website that we were watching earlier on, which was in inverted commas, celebrating 20 years of the Donor Conception Network. And it looks as though they have some sort of conference, I think, was it on on an annual basis? Anyway, they were interviewing people about, how they felt about the Donor Conception Network and what it meant to them. And it was really interesting. And, the thing that just popped into my head when I was watching it is, oh, my God, they all look so normal.
Yeah.
Which is just ridiculous, isn't it? Because I don't know what I expect them to all look like.
I thought it was quite interesting that they were talking to donor-conceived children.
Yeah.
Who'd obviously grown up now, were like teenagers, some of them. Yeah. And that was interesting. Like, yeah, like you say, they're just normal, well-adjusted kids because they must come from well-adjusted families.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You're not that you're making your job as a potential parent harder, but you're having to be very conscious about how you approach this within your family.
Yeah.
And I suppose you have to be quite well adjusted as a couple to then think about this as an option.
I think that's one of the positive sides of infertility. You can always say, you can always tell your kids how much they were wanted because this is what we had to go through.
Yeah, to get you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's been a really donor-heavy week this week.
Yeah. I've only recently looked at that egg bank.
Yeah, no, but I mean in terms of we've focused a bit more on donor than we have on adoption this week.
Yeah, we've got the adoption stuff coming up.
Yeah, so we're going to an adoption information evening next week, which I'm quite interested to go to, actually.
Yeah, we know very little about the process or anything beyond just the initial ideas. I think we both read like testimonials. That's about as far as I've looked into at the moment.
Yeah, I think I'm really quite interested to how I react emotionally to it. I think I'm hoping that's going to be quite telling for me anyway.
Yeah, me. I only have a rough idea. It's something I would like to do, but I've had no practical information about it.
No, I think it's quite different, isn't it? Reading about something and then
the real,
you know,
implications. Whichever way we go, and I think even more so with adoption, when you make that initial application, that's going to be a big deal because the ball's rolling.
Yeah, definitely. It's been quite good this week actually to be. To try and kind of be confronted by realities, isn't it? I think, like, I definitely got a lot out of our homework in looking, you know, looking at the egg bank, scrolling through it, seeing what that was all about. So I'm hoping to get equal benefit from next week.
Me too.
Yeah.
How are you feeling positive about the future at the moment?
Yeah, I am actually. We've had a really nice Christmas.
Yeah.
Good start to the new year.
Yeah.
I'm feeling mentally, I'm feeling well and I'm feeling good and hopeful because I definitely think for us, I have to do this for Emma, journey is not over yet. Thanks. Right.
We are still on it, if you will.
We are. And that's good, I think. It's definitely a good thing.
I think there was most of 2019... there still is uncertainty, but it felt like a very uncertain year.
It did, yeah.
Last year. And now we've got more practical steps now going into 2012. I think it's going to be a different...
2012?
Yeah, I've gone back in time.
Oh, fair enough.
20.
20.
Started with the same thing. Going into 2020,
yeah.
It's going to be a different year. Because we sort of put that stuff behind us. So we know we've got to go for a different... stage now a bit.
For sure. I think we've got new plans, new intentions, and we've got our hope back, I think. Certainly for me, I feel that way anyway.
Yeah. I hope you don't mind me saying that you found it all quite rough especially towards the end of last year.
Yeah, I really struggled. I really struggled.
Not that I didn't, but I think you were losing hope a bit.
Oh, I was at my lowest ebb, if you will. Anyway, we've whittled on for long enough.
Anywho.
So, hopefully you found this interesting and useful, and we will catch up with you guys next week.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We are mid-lockdown, and yet you are making time for us, and we're very grateful for that.
Yes, thank you both.
No problem at all. I say there's not much else to be doing.
No. It's a good point. It's a very good point. So let's start very briefly. I mean, Becky, we've had you on the podcast before. So let's start with a very, very brief introduction, kind of overview of both your backgrounds and why you're doing this.
I'm Becky from Defining Mum. So some of you may have heard me on an earlier episode talking about egg donation. But I've also got another passion that I want to try and raise awareness about, and that's fertility at work. And that stems from the fact that I used to work in HR. So I've worked in HR for 12 years, and I also really struggled, and it was probably one of the hardest parts of my fertility journey whilst trying to balance it with work. So I wrote a few blog posts on it over the past year, and has since connected with both Claire and Natalie, who are the co-founders of Fertility Matters at Work, and we've decided to make it our mission to try and sort of change the conversation around IVF at work and to try and raise awareness and just try and make it a more supportive environment for people who are going through treatment in the future.
And Claire, what's your background?
Pretty similar to Becky. So I've done over 20 years in HR in public, private and third sector. Pretty much the same as Becky. When I went through treatment, I was working for the public sector, and it was only after I had my child or my daughter that I looked back and thought, bloody hell, there was nothing helping me. There was nothing there. And I kind of bumbled through it on my own. And I just started reaching out to people and talking about it and actually doing the same as Becky. I started talking to individuals and saying, you know, what's your experience of this? And pretty much the same. There was nothing coming back. So I thought there's a definite need for this here. And that's kind of the beginnings of where I started with it.
And how did it come about then, the three of you coming together and deciding to start it? Was it a conversation, a casual conversation?
I saw an article written in the CIPD, which is the big sort of magazine for HR professionals, a year ago. And I remember sharing it. And it was only kind of later down the line, I was actually realised it was Claire, who I'd connected through Instagram as IVF at work. And we were both just, we had a chat, I think, one day just in the car. And we were both talking and saying, and Claire's has already done so much work around creating an ideal policy and some training that we said, well, actually, we really want to bring this to life. But neither of us had enough time ourselves. And we'd both already connected with Natalie from the Fertility Podcast. And she wrote a brilliant article in Grazia last year. And we know she had a really big interest in it as well. So we all kind of put our heads together and thought, well, three heads are better than one. Let's use all of our different strengths and really try and build something that will hopefully make a big change in the future.
And so talk us through kind of what the organisation does.
So it's really in the early stages at the minute, but our aim really is to reach as many organisations as possible across as many sectors as possible to train them on the reality of what it's like to have IVF at work and other types of fertility treatment as well. And just kind of to make sure that those organisations are set up to support people better, whether it be flexible working, but mostly the understanding and the kind of open policy to allow people to actually tell them in the first place so they can actually receive support, because there's less than a quarter in a survey that was done recently have actually said their workplace had a policy. So I think that's a huge starting point for people, just to know that their employer is willing to listen and they will recognise that. I mean, let's face it, we've all been through fertility treatment. It's not an easy thing to go through. It's time consuming. It affects your mental health. And I don't know anybody that's been able to go through it without it having some impact in the workplace. And I think, again, we all know there's so many misconceptions out there about fertility at work and fertility, what it means, and oh yeah, it's just going for the odd appointment, take some annual leave, when actually the number of appointments and the number of cycles you might need to go through, you could use your whole year's annual leave just on going for fertility treatment. So I think we just realise that there needs to be more understanding out there, there needs to be more training, and ultimately, I mean, my dream is for us to make some changes to statutory rights so that people who are working actually have some protected rights whilst they're going through fertility treatment, like those who are pregnant.
I think I didn't go on holiday for 2 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think I was quite lucky myself, because I was given some flexibility. But I think maybe because I worked in HR, I was probably felt in a better place to ask for it. But I still felt incredibly guilty. There was nothing adjusted in terms of workload, so I just spent evenings and weekends catching up. And eventually, when my first IVF cycle ended in a miscarriage, I felt under such pressure to go straight back into work, because I already felt guilty about the amount of time I'd already had off work. And that was almost like it's a silent loss, isn't it? People have never really known that you were pregnant in the first place. So again, miscarriage is a huge thing that we want to try and raise awareness of in the workplace as well, that people should be entitled to some compassionate leave in those circumstances, whereas quite often people are just forced to go back into work. And I've heard stories of people who have been at work whilst they're actually having a miscarriage and not felt like they've been able to say anything. So there's just so many different facets and so many different areas where things just need to change.
Gosh, yeah, I think we've both experienced infertility and IVF at work, but I mean, other than the kind of miscarriage stuff, what other kind of stories are you hearing from people? Are there real horror stories coming out?
There's a mixed bag, isn't there, Becky? There are some positive stories out there, so I don't want everybody listening to this to think that this is all doom and gloom. We are hearing some positive things that people are going through in terms of their employer being supportive and then bending over backwards, really, to kind of help them through what they need to go through. I think some of the key themes that I made a note of, people tend to keep this a secret. People don't seem to want to talk about it or feel they can talk about it. And we are hearing a lot via our Instagram page that it's down to the actual manager that is managing this situation, and it's not so much the organisation as a greater whole that knows about it and is helping. So, you know, we need to get that message out there and that education out there that Becky's described, that people understand what this actually entails. People have had or spoken to us about some comments that have been made to us, which is really, they're really horrendous, they're really inappropriate and not acceptable. And under any other circumstances, they would be picked up and dealt with by an employer. But because it's this taboo subject, it doesn't seem to be managed in the same way, to be honest.
I had a really great moment when I was, I just had a cycle cancelled. I'd been running to and from my clinic for like a couple of days. And an older male colleague came up to me at the end of the day after I'd had it cancelled and said, "Are you pregnant?" Oh. And I was like, "Definitely not. I am definitely not pregnant."
Just to rub salt in the wound.
It was... I just went away and cried.
Did you hold it together in front of him? Or
Yeah.
Because you do, don't you? Yeah.
Like, you can't let him see you crack.
No, exactly. If I'd let him see me crack, that would have been it.
My manager was so nice. She, like, I told her and I burst into tears, and then she burst into tears, and they were both crying at each other, and she was telling me all these positive stories about IVF. She was just wonderful.
That And that's so nice to hear, because quite often people don't get that response. And it just does seem to be the luck of the draw rather than a policy in place across an organisation. It's the luck of the draw as to whether you get an understanding manager who may have known somebody that's been through it or has been through it themselves. And that just, it shouldn't be down to luck as to whether or not you get supported at work when you're going through something that is so traumatic and affects your mental health. And like you say, there's so many people out there that say the wrong thing. And without having anybody to talk to, it just makes a difficult situation just even worse. And I think, just thinking you asked for any examples, one that springs to mind is somebody shared with us an extract from their policy, and they did actually have a policy that mentioned fertility treatment, which is a start, but they actually had it in the same sentence as cosmetic surgery for non-medical reasons. So it basically said, if anybody needs time off for cosmetic surgery for non-medical reasons or IVF, they can take annual leave. And the fact that it was actually grouped in with that category spoke volumes in terms of what they thought about it, and that it's a choice that people go through. And I think nobody chooses to do IVF over having sex and doing it for free, do they? They don't, and that's the kind of the people think out there, oh yeah, you're just trying for a baby, like, oh, you're just going to have some private treatment, and it's something that you want to be doing. It's a need, and it's something that people just don't understand. And I mean it's a whole general society issue, but in the workplace I feel like sometimes it can be even worse.
I mean, are you finding that more employers are having guidance in place, and what kind of guidance are you seeing, and what is best practice?
I don't think we are, Emma, to be fair. I mean, I'm still speaking to a lot of people. I know Becky is, and I know Natalie spends loads of time talking to loads of people about this. And there doesn't seem to be any sort of appetite, really, I think is what I need to say, about doing something about this. This is a massive workforce strategic challenge. This isn't something that's going to go away. This is actually going to increase in demand, and people are going to become more and more dependent on starting families for various reasons, for economic reasons, for lifestyle reasons, environmental reasons. And I don't think anyone's actually woken up to the fact that this is actually going to hit at some point, and people are going to start thinking, hold on a minute, how do I attract and then retain the best employees I can? Because everyone wants to be a great employer. There's massive competition for being an employer of choice, and this is going to be the way it goes. I mean, America already have a lot of sort of support around fertility treatment, like egg freezing and everything. We will go that way, and we generally will follow America in a lot of things, but that there just doesn't seem to be that recognition there. It's like the penny hasn't dropped. I think that's the best way I can describe it. Becky alluded to a policy that she read. I read one that said, please ensure in the IVF bit, please ensure you arrange appointments to cause as little inconvenience to the business as possible. And that's verbatim. That is what it said. And I was like, that is just unbelievably wrong.
Is there a world in which managers can turn around and say, well, it's not that common, it doesn't come up that often? I mean, you two were both HR, you know, working in HR. Did you come across it personally in your careers very much?
No, we didn't, did we?
No, we didn't. So, yeah, in my 12 years in HR, I never once had anybody come to me, whether it be a manager or an employee, and ask me about their rights and what they're entitled to with regards to fertility treatment. And honestly, if I hadn't been through it myself, if somebody would have came to me and asked, I probably would have Googled it just to see. And actually, if you Google it, there's not much out there in terms of what there is in terms of support. So basically, there's the ACAS website just talks about kind of at what point an employee is protected, and that's after embryo transfer for those 2 weeks, but it gives no advice around how you manage any absence leading up to it, other than the fact that it should be treated as any other medical appointment is treated, which can vary across different organisations. So that just speaks volumes, the fact that nobody's come to talk about it. And I think the reason why they haven't is because there's no policy, and they're just scared about what reaction they will face. And I think you're pretty much the same, Claire, as well, aren't you, in terms of
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've worked with I've been a HR manager for literally thousands, because I used to work in retail, and not one person in 15 years in there, not one person in 7 years in my current role. And it's just, and it isn't because it's not happening, because every time I pick up the phone and have a conversation, just random conversations with people, and I'm quite open about it now, they go, oh, that's happened to me as well. I've been through that. And I think, my God, all these people are talking about this to me. They need to be, you know, shouting it from the rooftops that this needs to change. And we've had a lot of people coming through Instagram, haven't we, Becky, saying, my, thank you for doing this. Thank you for being setting this up, because it's what we need. So there's a demand for it. It's just, again, refer back to the point I made about employers, just doesn't seem to have gone in.
This is kind of why I wanted to do this episode, because I found out that after you've had an embryo transfer, you, legally speaking, you're pregnant and therefore have the same rights as a pregnant woman. Are there any other rights or rules or anything that apply to people going through fertility treatment?
Well, that's the main one, Emma, to be fair. So that's covered by the Equality Act of 2010. So when you do go through embryo transfer, you are protected. There is actually an added on element onto that. If implantation fails, you are protected for a further 2 weeks. But in terms of any other kind of support, there is nothing out there. There's no guidance for employers, hence why Becky's alluded to the fact that we all feel, Natalie, Becky and myself, feel very passionate about changing the legislation on it. It needs to change. We have protected characteristics for so many things, yet this isn't one of them, and it needs to be one of them, because it's a very, very difficult journey.
Yeah.
And what about when it comes to baby loss, so miscarriage or stillbirth? What are the rules around that?
Until you reach 24 weeks, you're not entitled to any parental leave, maternity leave. So there are no rights in terms of time off. It's very much kind of led by the employer, and again, that's something that I think desperately needs to change. And it's so light, and no one's ever talked about it. And basically, you're very vulnerable up until the point you have your embryo transferred. So just going back to treatment, you are in a position where your absence could be taken as towards a trigger if you're being managed on your absence, and there is no protection there, basically. There is the potential that if you are discriminated against on those grounds, you could have a claim for sex discrimination, but it's a very difficult one and a difficult route to go down. So I don't think there's many examples out there, Claire. I'm not aware of any.
No, there isn't.
There definitely is discrimination out there, I'm sure. It's just one of those things that people aren't talking about. And I think it's one of the biggest fears of people who, when they're looking at telling their employers, they're worried about being discriminated against, it affecting their career path. And it was something I thought about. And to be honest, going through fertility treatment, I had to make some difficult decisions, and I took a sideways move out of a succession pipeline, because I just couldn't meet the demands of what they needed from me whilst I was going through it. So it did impact my career, and I think it impacts so many people in terms of their career as well. Which again is another loss that you have to face when you're going through infertility, and there's so many different things that you have to deal with, and actually, again, the loss of your career or the control around your career as well is one of them, sadly.
So what's the best time to tell your employer that you're going through treatment?
I always say to people who ask me this that they should tell their employer. I feel that they should, because the only way they can get support is by letting them know. Now, I understand this can be really scary. It can be a really big thing for people to have to go, especially when they're going in blind, when there's no policy, they have no idea how people are going to react. But we actually recently shared some top tips, really, for approaching your employer and telling them about it. And I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. So yeah. First one, be prepared that they will have no understanding whatsoever about what you're about to go through. So go in armed with information about what time off you'll need, what it entails. Be prepared to educate, basically, because it's unlikely that they'll understand. And actually, we can't expect them to understand if they haven't been through it themselves, everything that is involved. We will hopefully have some content soon that people can share in terms of just some fact sheets around research about the impact on mental health and the kind of provisions that we suggest that employers should offer. So hopefully that's something people can take in with them. And also to go in with some solutions yourself. So don't expect that they will have all of the answers for how you can work flexibly, or you could go in with suggestions yourself. So I think those, being armed and being prepared for educating and also offering suggestions, will kind of put you a few steps ahead. Because I know so many people who have been to their employer and they've just kind of gone, oh yeah, you can take annual leave, but without having those facts to back up what you're asking for, it's quite an easy thing for them to say. But by saying this is what it's going to involve, it kind of sets the scene a little bit more.
There's no legal obligation to disclose this to your employer. I think that's really key to say as well. So in case anyone's listening that thinks they have to tell their employer, that there's no legal obligation to do that and disclose that to anybody that they're working for. But I do agree with Becky. I mean, I didn't say anything for the first two cycles because I had all those feelings and, you know, the failure feelings, et cetera, et cetera. And I just didn't want people to know my business. But on the third one, I did, and I did feel more empowered. I think that's the word I'm kind of grappling for, because I could then have those conversations with my line manager and say, right, I have an appointment to do this. I can do this, this and this. And she would say, yep, that's fine. And it just, it opened up a two-way conversation that we could come to some sort of collaborative agreement, I think.
We get loads of emails from people who are having the same quandary that I actually had at one point, which is, I've been going through treatment for a few years. I don't seem to be getting pregnant. I'd like to get a new job. But if I do that, then all the maternity leave benefits I may have accrued will go out the window. Should I take the new job, or should I stay in my old job and carry on treatment in the hope that I get pregnant? What would your advice be to that person?
Oh, gosh, it's so individual, isn't it? I actually was, when I found out that I needed IVF, I had just handed my notice in, my employer, and I was just starting with a new one. So I kind of was in that situation and had to tell my employer before I'd even started the job, which was so daunting. But I think the problem is, when you're going through IVF, is quite often you just feel like your whole life's on hold. And there's so many people that have kind of stuck with a job that they're not happy in, just because they want to have that support and stability should they get pregnant. And it's such a difficult one to answer, because it all depends on your financial situation and everything. But I've got a video to share on our Instagram page soon from someone who did put their career on hold, and they I think they went for a job that was kind of easier to do, but they didn't enjoy it as much, because but they stuck with it because they wanted the maternity benefits. And after a couple more failed cycles, they suddenly decided to take the leap, and they found a job that they are enjoying much more, and have found it easier to go through the cycles because they're feeling emotionally more stable in their job. So I think it's that balance of how comfortable you are in your current job, what could the other job give you. And yeah, I can't really say one way or the other, Claire. I don't know whether you...
I'm listening to you, thinking about all the emails I've received with people saying very similar things, Emma, to be honest. And all that's in my head are people that have left working completely because this has become so overwhelmingly difficult and challenging and just emotionally draining. They just can't cope with work, full stop. So I guess Becky's absolutely right. It is an individual choice. There isn't a right or wrong answer, I don't think, to this. It's just one of those things, but you just never know what's around the corner, do you? That's the thing about anything you do in life. You know, if you had a crystal ball and you could say, right, I know I'll be pregnant in 12 months, I can do this. You can't have that. It depends on your personality as well. You might be one of those people that go, right, I feel more comfortable being stable and knowing what I'm doing, or I'm going to take that risk. So there's so many factors that influence it. So there isn't a definitive answer, I'm afraid.
I think you have to be comfortable with your decision, whatever the outcome of your treatment is. And you have to kind of make peace with yourself. And if this works out, then I'm happy with having made that decision, and vice versa, because it is hard.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much for doing this. It's been such a pleasure to speak to you, and I'm so glad we finally managed to do this episode. Just to finish things off, what is your advice to anybody who's listening and kind of trying to decide whether they're going to approach their boss or you know, tell their work about what they're going through?
Oh, my advice would be to be emotionally prepared to have those conversations. People will naturally ask you questions about things. You need to have your limits set, so you need to be able to say, I'm happy answering up to here, I'm not past this, and to get people to respect what you're going through and indicate whether, I mean, I know lots of people that have been through it who are happy to talk about it. I know a lot of people who aren't. So I think it's about making those feelings clear from the very beginning so that you don't feel people are intruding on your personal life and actually making things worse, I guess, is my perspective.
Yeah, so as Claire said around, be clear about confidentiality and how far you want it to go. And as I said earlier, just be prepared with information. Go in armed with information to give to them. Educate and tell them what you need. Don't expect them to guess what you need. So if you're going to need a certain time away around embryo transfer, I'd set out right from the beginning what support you're looking for, just so that there's no grey areas and you basically then know in your heart that you've done everything you can to ask. Now, obviously, they may not be able to agree to it, but hopefully there's some compromise in there and it can take away some of the weight of going through treatment whilst at work. And I think for those people who have been through it and haven't said a word or spoken to anybody, I just don't know how you do it, because it is such a huge burden to carry. And yeah, I just hope that we can make it easier in the future for people to talk about it, so that they've not got the weight of having to hide something that is so emotional and so huge as a life event from people who you work with kind of nearly every day. And my final tip is just to try and find some support within your work colleagues as well. If you've got a little group of people that can cover for you, or can kind of just give you that support if you need it, and can recognise when you've got a moment where you need to maybe slip away from the desk if somebody's announced a pregnancy or there's another baby shower card going round. That just makes a huge difference as well. I know I had a little network of people who kind of looked out for me as well. So I think that's equally as important, as well as Brilliant. Speaking to your manager.
That's some great advice there, I think, definitely.
Guys, thank you so much. It's been lovely to speak to you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Now it's time for
IVF. We are talking low AMH versus low egg quality. Not gonna lie, had to look up what AMH stands for this morning.
What does it stand for, Emma?
It stands for anti-malarian hormone.
Anti-malarian hormone. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And did your Google search reveal anything else?
No, because I just searched for that.
Okay. But,
so AMH is what they measure, and it gives doctors a rough idea of essentially how many eggs you have left.
Mm. I don't know what mine was, because I feel like, I don't know if this is the same for everyone, but I don't think they made a big deal of it, of telling me. I feel like they probably don't want to tell you about it because they'll have to explain, and they try to really dumb it down, don't they, when you're going through tests. So it's never been flagged to me what mine was.
If you are somebody who likes to know, and we say this all the time, but we'll say it again, just ask the doctor for your test results.
Yeah.
Just ask them for a copy, and then you can like Google it when you get home or whatever.
Yeah, just don't go into the process expecting them to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. If you're somebody who doesn't like to know, don't ask them, because sometimes it's nicer not to know, to be honest. I've got no idea.
I
assume I'm fine.
My ignorance is bliss.
Mm, absolutely. We hear a lot of people on this podcast and around saying, I had low AMH, and then saying that they found getting pregnant really hard. So we wondered if having a essentially very kind of shorthand way of saying a low egg reserve means that you have bad eggs.
Hmm.
And we asked Professor Tim.
We did. And here's what he had to say.
So AMH is anti-Müllerian hormone, and it's a measure of ovarian reserve, so numbers of eggs in the ovaries. We know that for women with regular cycles, your AMH level, in fact, does not predict the chance of natural conception. Because if you have regular cycles, you're going to be releasing one egg per month. And so whether you have a low or high AMH doesn't really make a lot of difference to that. From an IVF perspective, having a low AMH can suggest we're going to struggle to get a good number of eggs and therefore embryos. So having a very low AMH, levels below sort of 4 or 5 picomoles per litre, is highly predictive of a lower chance of numbers of eggs, highly predictive of having fewer eggs collected and therefore potentially lower chance of IVF working. Having said that, the most important predictor of IVF success is actually the age of the woman's eggs. So if there's a woman who's younger, less than 35, less than 37 or so, who has a low AMH, we may be getting low numbers of eggs, but the genetic quality of the eggs is often pretty good. So therefore, younger, with a low AMH, you can still have a good chance of IVF success.
All right, well, that's it.
Hope you enjoyed the show, guys.
Next week, you're going running.
I am going running. Yeah, well, kind of. I'm going running in my mind. I'm speaking to Lucy, who is founder of Rainbow Running Club.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I really look forward to listening to that.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, in the meantime, hope you had a nice Easter.
Yeah.
Have a nice fourth week in lockdown.
Yes, have a good one.
And maybe when next we speak, we might see signs of being released.
Yeah, maybe, but maybe not. So, you know.
Unlikely.
Either way, we'll all be all right, won't we?
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Stay safe, guys.
Yeah. See you later.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.